22, chapter 23. See, the last section of chapter 22, Luke chapter 22, Jesus before the council. And so, basically, as we go through this trial of Jesus, it is just a sad situation. Just watching our son reading about the Savior, about all that he went through. There's six phases of this mock trial and everything leading up to the hearing and the trial, official trial. So the six phases of it, and we're about to get into the fourth. Well, we've already seen three of them. So it started with them leading Jesus to Annas, the former high priest, you remember, and they questioned him about some things. And then he was led to Caiaphas, who was technically the high priest. And then he appeared here in the last section here. We see him appearing before the Sanhedrin. And we have a greater account of it in some of the other Gospels. But this is him before the greatest court in the Jewish land. And so it says in verse 67, then question again, verse 66, when day came, the assembly of the elders of the people gathered together, both chief priests and scribes, and they led him away so that their council, and they said, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And so that was legitimate for Jesus to say that, because that had been done. Remember, he's not done anything in secret. His ministry has been open and public, and he has had some opportunities to talk to them about some of these things, and they hadn't believed him. And so if you look over at Matthew chapter 22, just for a second, and here I can give you an example of that. Matthew chapter 22 and at verse 41 in that context, the ESV has the heading, "Whose son is the Christ?" So this is a specific conversation about the Christ. And verse 41 says, "Now while the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them a question, saying, 'What do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he?' And they said to him, 'The son of David.'" Of course, that was prophecy. So all the Jews, they knew that the Messiah would be a descendant of David. And so, but he said to them, "How is it then that David in spirit calls him Lord, saying, 'The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet.' If then David calls him Lord, how is he his son?" And all very interesting stuff. We studied that text some other time. But look at verse 46. "And no one was able to answer him a word, nor from that day did anyone dare to ask him any more questions." And so now when you read that and you turn back over here to Luke and you see at verse 57, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe. Oh. I wonder why he said that. Well, of course, because as we just read, I mean, he's been doing this, and they haven't accepted him, and Jesus knows that. And he throws these things out constantly. We saw another one, if you remember last week, where he is just exposing, in a quick way, their hypocrisy. He knows they're a bunch of fakes and phonies. They don't care about the law. They don't. The only thing they're interested in is Jesus being put to death. They want to get rid of him. And that's their whole agenda. Any pretense that they care about the law, or they're upset because he has broken the law, or he's committed blasphemy, they don't care about any of that. It's all just a front, because they want Jesus to be put to death. But here he is now before the whole Sanhedrin, so that's the third phase. Then as we'll start reading here, he's going to appear before Pilate, then he's going to be led away to Herod, and then he's going to be brought back to Pilate. And so it really, now you're dealing with Roman authorities are getting involved. And that was necessary because, as the Jews would admit, they don't have the authority to do what they want to do. They can't put him to death. They can find him guilty and even condemn him, but they can't actually put him to death. And so now it says then in chapter 23 and verse 1, and then the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." And so I think that's about where we left off. I think we just mentioned that last week, where he, again, that is lying. It's just a flat-out lie. Like, do you remember the conversation, in the book of Matthew, chapter 22, but this time go back to verse 15. And I'm sure that you're familiar with this, but this is the context where the Jews, they're trying to entrap Jesus, and so they keep trying, you know, like, they try about three times or so to entrap him. The Pharisees go and try to do it. That doesn't work. So the Sadducees try their hand, and that doesn't work. And the Pharisees come back, and that doesn't work. And they're just really trying to entrap him. Well, in the midst of that, we have this situation with regard to Caesar. At verse 15, it says, "And then the Pharisees went and plotted how to entangle him in his words. And they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, saying, 'Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God truthfully.'" You know, all flattery. It's a bunch of fakes, is what they are. And it's interesting, by the way, that all of these groups don't get along. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Herodians, they all hate each other. Except when they come together to get Jesus. Now they're all working together. It's kind of how life works sometimes with things like that. But here they are, and they're just trying to flatter, you know, just, "Well, teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God truthfully. And you do not care about anyone's opinion, for you are not swayed by appearances." Again, it's just flattery. They were right about that, of course, but they're not really complimenting him. It says, "Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" Now watch his answer. But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why put me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin for the tax." And they brought him a denarius, and Jesus said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And they said, "Caesar's." And then he said to them, "Therefore render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And so, of course, he frustrated them in that. They couldn't entrap him like they wanted. But now we come back down here to Luke chapter 23, and what does it say? They are accusing him, and they accuse him of doing what? Of saying what? Not to pay taxes to Caesar. Where'd they get that from? All I heard Jesus say is, "Give to Caesar what is due to Caesar. Render to Caesar what is due." He said the very opposite. So, I just want you to see, I think you already know, they just lie over and over to get what they want. And they don't even care. I don't believe it's in Luke's account. I think it's another account where we read about Judas. And you know, it's getting around this time when Jesus is condemned and Judas starts feeling remorse. And so he goes back to them and says, "Hey, I will betray the Son of God, an innocent man," and throws the money back at them. And they said, "What is that to us?" Now, wait a minute. Here's the guy that you used to set up Jesus, and now he's telling you, though he's an innocent man, but they say, "We don't care about that. That means nothing to us." And that led to him, of course, committing suicide. But that's their attitude, their spirit. They're not after truth. They're just a bunch of hypocrites and a bunch of liars, and it's all about having Jesus put to death. They want to get rid of him. And so, now, again, it says that he is stirring up the people, and notice some of the things that it says here. It says forbidding to pay tribute and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. And so Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so." And that is a yes. In the Hebrewism, everybody would take that as a yes. And Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no fault with this man." So Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus says yes. If we read some other accounts, and maybe I'll do that here. In fact, turn over to John chapter 18. John chapter 18. As I told you last week and probably the last couple of weeks, it would be good for you to get a harmony of the Gospels and read through them together. There's a good commentary by brother, by McGarvey and Pendleton, I think, called the 4-4 Gospels. It's been around forever. And he does a real good job putting all of these things side by side and labeling it at A, B, C, D, so that you can really know, and he just kind of merges them all together. But you know by the way he labels it who is saying what. And it gives you a better idea of what is happening. Because what one writer leaves out, the other one will have. And then you kind of put it all together. But over here in chapter 18, John chapter 18, here, verse 28, I think is what I want. Verse 28 says, "And then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters, and it was early morning." Really was against the law to do these kind of things. "But they themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover." So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusations do you bring against this man?" And they answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." And Pilate said to them, "Take him yourself and judge him by your own law." The Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put away or to put anyone to death." And so it's the same situation, just John's account, and he goes more into it. And so you see there again, they want to put him to death, but it's not lawful for them to do it. This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die. So Pilate entered the headquarters again and called Jesus, and he said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" And, well, that kind of perturbs Pilate. Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world." So we get some pretty important insight. Like, what does that tell you? Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world." What does that tell you about the kingdom? It's spiritual. He never came to set up a literal physical kingdom here on earth. Premillennialists, of course, they have an answer for everything, but this really gives them trouble. This whole idea, he didn't come to set up a physical kingdom. In fact, this whole interview with Pilate would never have gone the way it did if Pilate thought he was trying to set up a physical kingdom, which would mean he would be attempting to overthrow Rome. And there's no way that Pilate could hear that and come back and say, "Oh, I don't find any fault with him." Because if that got back to the emperor, Pilate would be put to death his own self. So Pilate, and we don't know why Pilate or how Pilate had some of the understanding that he did, but I know this. He knew, as he's asking Jesus, "You king?" And Jesus is affirming, yeah, Yeah, I'm king. And another translation, he might say it later on in here. I get some of these two gospels mixed up. But in one of them at least, he said, listen, I was so born. I was born to be king of the Jews. And he uses that kind of straightforward language with Pilate. If somehow Pilate knew, he wasn't talking politically. Because if he was talking about a political kingdom, he'd have to do something about it. He would have agreed, yes, this man needs to be put to death. But he keeps coming back. I find nothing wrong with him. That tells us a whole lot about the nature of the kingdom. And so without John, you know, we kind of get that from this teaching of John. But anyway, he says, my kingdom is not of this world. And then Pilate said to him, so you are king. Jesus said, you say that I am a king for this purpose. Well, all I had to do is keep reading. Huh? For this king, for this purpose, I was born. And for this purpose, I have come into the world to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. And Pilate said to him, what is truth? So we just have more detail about that, and particularly the nature of the kingdom from the pen of John. But when you read those together, is there any doubt in anyone's mind that Jesus is affirming, yes, I'm king. I came to be king. But the Jews are trying to get Pilate to think this is political. And somehow he wants to overthrow Rome, and therefore he's guilty of death. Because they now discover that blasphemy, that meant nothing to Pilate. Now what do I care about your laws? Well, you try him your own self and punish him and whatever, but that he's not worthy of death just because you say he committed blasphemy. But if he claimed to be setting up a physical kingdom, that would be something else. And so clearly, when we read it, put it all together, that wasn't the case at all. So at verse 6 then, Luke chapter 23, it says, and when Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. That goes back, I guess I skipped a few verses. Pilate said to the chief priests of the crowd, verse 4, I find no fault with this man, but they were urgent, saying, he stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea and from Galilee even to this place. That's what raised the attention of Pilate. Oh, he's a Galilean. I might be able to get out of this situation. Because none of these... I told you before, the Jews were hard to deal with, even with regard to the Romans, but especially with the little puppet rulers that Rome put in place, like Herod or Pilate. They had a hard time with the Jews. And so they were drawn in many times to different things with the Jews, and they never liked it, and they were always trying to get out of it. And here's Pilate. So he's dealing with this, and he hears about Galilee, and he realizes, Herod, he's the tetrarch of Galilee. That's his domain. And if he's a Galilean, I can get out of this situation. I'll just send him over to Herod. And Herod wanted to. Herod had been wanting to talk with Jesus for a long time. And so it would get that off his hands. And please, right now, as we'll read, there's some enmity between Pilate and Herod. We don't know why. There's, I think in Luke chapter 13, there was a time when Pilate spilled the blood of many Galileans. We don't know from that passage how many, but it was a terrible situation, basically a bloodbath. He just murdered a lot of Galileans. And so it is surmised by some scholars that because he went into Herod's jurisdiction to do that, that there had been animosity between them since that time. I'll do Herod a favor. He wants to talk to Jesus. I'll send Jesus to him, get him out of my hair, and everything will be great. And so that's exactly what he does. And so it says at verse 6 that when Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at the time. None of them lived in Jerusalem, neither one of them. But they were there because of the Passover and all of that. And so when Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him because he had heard about him, and he was hoping to see some sign done by him. And so now look over at Matthew chapter 14. At Matthew chapter 14, and not much of this we want to read, but here now you know that Herod wants to see Jesus, and primarily because he has heard of the miracles that Jesus has done. It's very interesting. Now, remember, what do we know about Herod? What has he done that you're very familiar with? He's the same Herod. There were several of those Herods. This is the same one who beheaded John the Baptist. And you recall at that time that he was hearing about this Jesus doing things, doing miracles. And so he was a little bit worried. John the Baptist has been resurrected. And so this goes way back here to Matthew chapter 14, and at verse 1 it says, at the time Herod the tetrarch heard about the fame of Jesus, and he said to his servants, this is John the Baptist. He has been raised from the dead, and that is why these miraculous powers are working in him. For Herod had seized John and bound him and put him in prison for the sake of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. And then we know the story there and what happens, how he is ultimately beheaded, and things. But that's but again, it goes way back to that time period. Herod has been wanting to hear the fame of Jesus, and he wants to talk to them. Look over at Luke chapter 9. Go back to Luke chapter 9. Luke, the 9th chapter, and verse 7. So verse 7 says, now Herod, the tetrarch, heard about all that was happening, and he was perplexed, because it was said by some that John had been raised from the dead, by some that Elijah had appeared, and by others that one of the prophets of old had risen. Herod said, John I beheaded, but who is this about whom I hear such things? Now watch. And he sought to see him. So they go way back to that period of time. He wants to see Jesus because he's hearing of all of this stuff. Now, nothing has been resolved about that, going all the way back up here to Luke chapter 23. And so Pilate knows about that. So he sends Jesus to Herod, and so that would maybe please him, and their friendship might be rekindled a little bit. And so now Jesus is before Herod, and he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. Well, that's not good, is it? If you're Herod. You've been waiting all this time. I want to see Jesus. I want to talk to him. I want to question Jesus. And now finally he has Jesus before him. And he starts questioning him. Jesus just sits there. Doesn't say anything. Won't answer. And so, you know, that's the problem. No, that perturbed Herod. And all the while, the chief priest, verse 10 says, and the scribe stood by vehemently accusing him. And Herod, with his soldiers, treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then, arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate. So Herod's all upset, and here it is. He's not saying anything, and the Jews are here, and they're making all kinds of accusations. Jesus doesn't care. He's not answering any of them. And so Herod begins to abuse, to mistreat Jesus, and then sends him back to Pilate. And so Pilate got half of what he wanted, because as we read this, it says, and Herod, and look at verse 12, and Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day. For before this, they had been at enmity with each other. So Pilate got half of what he wanted. And now he and Herod are friends again. But here's Jesus right back in his life. Now he has to continue to deal with the Jews and deal with this situation. It says, Pilate, verse 13, Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people, and he said to them, you brought this man as one who has been misleading the people, and after examining him before you, behold, I do not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. So we didn't see a lot of that with Herod, of course, and Jesus wasn't, but obviously nothing came out for Herod to say, we have to do something about this man and put him to death. And the same thing with regard to Pilate would be true of Herod. If there was any inclination at all that he was rising up against Rome in any way, then he would have to act upon that in some way, whatever the extent of his authority was. Again, he was a tetrarch. He had a fourth of the region. He was a ruler. Remember, when Herod the Great died, then the kingdom was split up amongst his sons. And so this Herod has a fourth, and Galilee was a part of the region. And so anyway, but he would have had to act. But obviously, he just sends him back to Pilate. So, still nothing worthy of death. And now Pilate is just trying to reason with the Jews. Listen, I've checked him out. I've talked with him. Nothing. I've sent him to Herod. Nothing. And so he really wants to release him. And so he even trying to appease the Jews, because this is what they did, that I will therefore punish and release him. Why are you going to punish him? He's innocent. He wants to appease the Jews. And by punishing, what you would do, particularly before a crucifixion, but even before that, the punishment here has to do with scourging. He's going to scourge him and then set him free. And by the way, when the Romans did that, it was a lot worse than when the Jews did. When the Jews whipped you, how many times could they do it? 30 times. But they could do it 40 times, and they always went to 39 because they didn't want to pass. So the Romans had no such limitations. And when somebody was going to look like they were going to be sentenced to death, then they really let loose, because they didn't care. They didn't care much anyway. But when that was the situation, like, people didn't normally die when they were scourged. But when someone was about to be crucified, sometimes the scourging would lead to death. And that's where you read of the scourge and how they had, like, little bones or whatever, stone on the tip of the rope, and it would pull the skin right off the back. And they would be bent over, sit down on a stoop or bent over a stoop, and their shirt off, and they just rip away at the flesh of the person. And just a terrible situation. Now, remember, Jesus knew all of this was coming. I mean, he did that for you. Like, he knew he was going to be crucified. He knew that before that he would be scourged. All of that. All of this mistreatment and abuse, even the murder, he knows all of that. He's enduring it all. Remember, he could call 12 legions of angels if he wanted to. He's enduring all of that for us. And we should never forget that. We should thank God every day. We should thank Jesus every day. It should absolutely lead to our complete commitment to Christ. We should be giving our lives to him freely, not because we have to, but because of all that he did for us. Sometimes we just think of the cross, and that was horrific, but these kind of things went on, and he knew even the details of this. And so now he's not going to be scored right now. He is going to be, but right now he just suggested it. And hey, listen, I'll punish him, and then let him go. Certainly that would appease the Jews, but they all cried out together, "Away with this man!" And they say, "Release to us Barabbas, a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder." So what did the law of Moses say about murder? If you killed somebody, what was the punishment for that?
Your life.
I'm saying someone, I hear you, but...
Your life.
Death. Life for life. I mean, that was God's law. Even before the law of Moses, remember in Genesis chapter 9, God affirmed that idea of life for life. On the basis that man is created in the image of God. So if you take a life, your life should be taken. That was the law. That was God's will before the law of Moses. That was actually a part of the law of Moses. And so what does that say about these Jews? Here Pilate is giving them the opportunity. You can have this murderer, and we'll put him to death, crucify him, and this innocent man will let go. They say, no. Crucify the innocent man. Let's let the murderer go. How much do they care about the law? Not at all, did they? They weren't interested in the law. They weren't these zealots who just had to keep the law and were angry at anyone who didn't. They weren't like that at all. They want Jesus dead. Crucify him. Yeah, we don't care about the law. We know this man over here, he deserves death, but let's release him. Let's put a murderer back into the community. Back into the city with our families, our children, our wives. Let's let him go. And crucify this innocent one. But that's all they can see now. Tunnel vision. They want Jesus dead. And nothing else is going to satisfy. And so, at verse 20 again, Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus. But they kept shouting, "Crucify him. Crucify him. A third time he said to them, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found in him no guilt deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him." But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for whom they asked, but he delivered Jesus over to their will. And so the Jews are going to get their way. But remember, they're just playing into God's hands, because this was all a part of the predetermined plan, foreknowledge of God. And so the devil really thinks he's winning here. The devil has been trying to get Jesus put to death from the time he was born, you remember. And he finally is going to get what he wants. Again, he is playing into the hands of God, using these human beings as instruments to do what is ultimately God's will. And so this is what they're doing. They release a murderer. They have Jesus put to death. Peter, of course, talked about it a lot in his first few sermons about this whole scenario. And I know the bell is going to ring, but let's turn over to Acts chapter 3 before it does. Acts chapter 3, and this is the second sermon that was preached by Peter, the second sermon ever preached. And at verse 13, it says, "The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, the God of our fathers, glorified his servant Jesus, who you delivered over and denied in the presence of Pilate when he had decided to release him. But you denied the holy and righteous one and asked for a murderer to be granted to you. And you killed the author of life, whom God raised from the dead. To this we are witnesses." Peter really makes it dramatic, doesn't it? I mean, that's good preaching right there. I mean, he really painted them a picture. You released a murderer, but this one who was innocent, the author of life, you wanted a murderer instead of him. So you delivered him over to be crucified. He said, "The holy and righteous one." And it says, verse 16, "In his name, by faith in his name, he has made this man strong, whom you see and know, and the faith that is through Jesus has given the man this perfect health in the presence of you all." That, of course, is talking about that man who was laid at Gate Beautiful, who was healed. Now they're learning, yeah, he was healed. Everybody knows that he couldn't walk. He was really in need, and by the power of this one whom you had crucified, he was raised up and able to walk. And so that would all, it's no wonder as we close and we read about this, we go on to read here, we'll find again that hundreds obeyed the gospel. Thousands obeyed the gospel. 3,000 on the day of Pentecost. By the end of this, I think we get up to 5,000. And so, because they're seeing these dramatic things, it all goes back to these Jews who have nothing on their mind but the death of Jesus. And we're glad, we're thankful that Jesus was willing to go to the cross, but it's just sad to read how it all played out. And he did it for you, and he did it for me. We should think about that. All right, we'll pick up there next time.